TCL is a proud sponsor of the 1500 ESPN Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand.
Raised on basketball, raised in front of a computer screen, raised for covering the game, raised by Wolves. Now talking all things Timberwolves, the Raised by Wolves podcast.
Yes, indeed. We're back for another edition of Raised by Wolves. You can hear us, of course, on Podcast 1, 1500ESPN.com, and on iTunes. I'm Manny Hill, and I've got another voice here in the studio with me. He's going to be a regular part of Raised by Wolves once a week or so. You may know him already. He covers the Timberwolves for Zone Coverage, and he contributes to us at 1500ESPN. As well, Dane Moore is here. What's up, man?
What's up, man? It's good to be here. Get into the studio. Look at your face, kind of through a screen, kind of.
I know. I wish if you're listening, I wish you could see kind of the setup we have here in this studio. Like me,
I can see your elbow.
Yeah, we can. The way the studio is set up, the microphones are kind of like on opposite ends of the table, and there's like a big
old screen.
Two huge screens in here for, you know, all of our production and stuff we do in these studios. But welcome. It's good to have you on board. I've been a big fan of your work for a while.
That.
And I think the first story that I the first story of yours that I read was you were breaking down it was last year, you were breaking down Tom Thibodeau's his offense and his defense.
Right.
And just sort of how the league has, over the last few years, I mean, since his Chicago days, has kind of adapted to, you know, attacking his defense where, the defense is sort of designed to force teams to take long twos, long mid-range shots. And, of course, the game has transitioned to a three-point game where everybody's throwing up threes. We saw John Henson from the Bucks throwing up threes on Friday night, which – I think he had hit one in his career up until this year, and then he hit three on Friday night.
Dead eye, yeah.
Yeah. Let's just start with that because...
No, that's a good place to start. That is. And I think, because I'm sure, as is inevitable at this time with the Butler cloud hanging over this, we'll touch on some things that we're upset with or would maybe do differently if we were in Tom Thibodeau's shoes.
Right.
But kind of that antiquated system that you're describing or I was describing last year, I think it is worth pointing out that it's beginning to evolve this year a little bit. And I know we can almost skip over all the X's and O's and just focus on Butler, but you know, I do think Thibodeau deserves some credit in that way. And mm-hmm. I would say the biggest thing you can kind of point to is that the Timberwolves, on the simplest of levels, have begun to show some flexibility in defending the pick and roll. There are switches. That's kind of the really basic way we think about it. Is this team switching or not?
And they didn't do any of that really last year at all.
On the ball, certainly not. I mean, maybe you would see off ball, you know, there'd be some sort of swap there and you'd see a switch. But predominantly, and I mean, without getting too far into the minutia, like the Timberwolves, generally speaking, were a team that does what is called dropping the pick and roll, where the big man sets a screen and you have oftentimes Towns or Gorgui Dieng, they'll drop back into the lane and kind of, you know, make that wall that you were just kind of describing that, you know, ideally has the other team shoot a kind of contested mid-range jump shot. But now you're seeing Thibodeau's system show a little bit of diversity, a little bit more aggression. I think Indiana, which was sometime last week, I think that was the best game of the year, and that's the game you saw the most of that. Victor Oladipo was relatively kind of slowed down by that. Towns was getting out, showing on some picks. You saw Taj Gibson blitzing a few of them. But still, at the end of the day, I mean, I don't know. It's maybe a little too late for some of that. the ship, I think, in many ways has sailed from the perception of a lot of, you know, Timberwolves fans, and they're not really willing to give Thibodeau some credit, even if he deserves it, because at the end of the day we have this huge elephant in the room of the Butler situation, and clearly something that resembles a almost blind faith that Thibodeau has in Jimmy Butler, and nothing else really matters beyond that. And so you can do everything right, X's and O's and whatever, but so long as you carry on this sort of this sort of path that they're on here, it's hard to find anything to really latch onto and be excited about. That Indiana game, it's hard to get too excited about. It's hard to get excited about beating LeBron last night,
yeah.
Because what's really the point? Yeah, you get the win in the win column, but what's the point?
Yeah, because Jimmy still wants out, and he's not, in all likelihood, he's not going to re-sign this summer. So it's kind of like, and that's what makes last night so frustrating is, you know, seeing what Jimmy can do on the floor. I mean, he hits the big shot to sort of essentially put the game away, and he hits six threes. Now, Jimmy's obviously not a great three-point shooter, but you can see in games like last night, you could see why this guy is valuable and why it's so frustrating that he wants out and why it's so frustrating that this situation has sort of become what it is. And now if you're the Wolves and you're a Wolves fan, you're looking right at sort of hitting sort of a soft reset button by moving Jimmy Butler, and you've got Towns locked up long term, which is obviously a good thing. But now you're sort of, because there's sort of this unknown of like where Jimmy's going to end up going, if he's going to get and end up being traded, and now you're just sort of wondering, there's still sort of this uncertainty, even though you've got your young 22-year-old franchise center locked up. Now there's still just so much uncertainty on where Jimmy's going to go, and what, you know, if you move him, what sort of return you're going to get for him, and is that going to be enough long term for this team's success?
Well, and I think that's the most perplexing issue to it, is what does Tom Thibodeau want for Jimmy Butler? What will they do? And I mean, there's a lot of inflated reports as to what has been offered, you know, and every kind of time the word is that's not enough in the eyes of the Timberwolves. And my question is, what is enough? You know, like you've said, we will trade Jimmy Butler if the right offer is there. The offers are coming in, and never is it explained, leaked in any sort of way that why this isn't enough. And to me, that's interesting and telling, because maybe what that means is there isn't an enough in Tom Thibodeau's eyes. Maybe it's lip service that he's just saying this because as a kind of, you know, PR cover up. I mean, I think we have to really consider the fact that in Thibodeau's eyes, Jimmy is absolutely the perfect piece for this team, and he said all along, I'm only going to do what's best for the Minnesota Timberwolves. So if, in fact, Jimmy is perfect for this team in Thibodeau's eyes, then there isn't a deal that he will do. And yeah, until we hear otherwise, I don't know. I'm not assuming that Thibodeau will make a deal. I don't think, and I get it. If I were him, it's like, that's the guy he wants. You gave him the rights to the full autonomy over all roster decisions.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, like, this is where you are. The only sure way to make a step going forward to actually trade him is to have Glenn Taylor step in. And I don't want him to come in and make doing the wheeling and dealing. That's not his forte.
Right.
But I don't know this, but I would assume it would not be impossible to bring someone in to consult you on making a trade for Jimmy Butler. And now maybe they're not at that point. Maybe Thibodeau is working on it. Maybe Scott Layden is working on it. But at some point, you have to question that. And I think so much of Thibodeau's behavior suggests that there might not be something he is willing to do. And he has his own, like, he has to be thinking about it from his perspective and his own self-care or whatever. He might get fired if Jimmy gets traded. So, I don't know. It's just that you're spinning the wheels in this, like, flat circle that I don't know how you're going to find resolution, because no party seems as if they're actually doing anything to make a change. And I don't know, what, we're 7 games into the season right now, there's no change and no real signs. It looks like this is going to spin on and on. And if you're a Timberwolves fan, like, are you going to keep watching if this goes on till Thanksgiving? I mean, maybe even another week. I don't know. I feel like people are consistently disconnecting. The fan base at Target Center, I'm at these games, is obviously they're booing, but then when they're not booing, they just seem like fans that are out there. I mean, obviously this isn't every fan, but it's a different crowd. It's like people who are treating this like I'm going out to the movies, like for some entertainment. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's like,
yeah.
It's not, I don't feel that the fan base is connected to the team, and there isn't, I mean, it's completely different than when you go to a Vikings game on a Sunday or even a Twins game. It seems like, you know, people are invested in the team, not just the event of like grabbing some hot dogs and sitting around and like drinking beers with your friends at the game. And that's totally the vibe there. I mean, I think the engaged fans are like, nah, I'm done. Like, I'm gonna like make noise on Twitter about it, and I'll watch on TV. But like, you're losing me, and I don't know. Yeah. Like, at what point is that not okay? I don't know. I'm not in the like the accounting department and know the profit margins of that. But as someone who, you know, wants to see people connect to this team, it's frustrating for me.
Yeah, and you have to wonder too, like, because I mean, Glenn Taylor, he has to know. He has to look around. I mean, he's at these games.
Yeah, he's sitting right on the bench.
He's sitting right on the bench. He's sitting right with the team. Right. Like, and he's hearing the crowd when, you know, when Tom Thibodeau's introduced and the boos are raining through. And I mean, he hears what the fans that are sitting close to the floor might be yelling out and saying. And so I for him, this can't be. I can't imagine that this is an easy, you know, sort of situation for him to sort of deal with. Now, in fairness, I mean, he made the decision to hire Tom Thibodeau, and he made a decision to give him all the power that he gave to Tom Thibodeau and pay him the money that he paid him and give him the contract that he gave him. So, you know, in some ways, Glenn's got to kind of look in the mirror and say, all right, well, this is, you know, I've got to figure out a way to get this right one way or the other. But to your point on Tibbs, I have long, ever since Jimmy, the trade request came, you know, became public last month, I have been asking the question, okay, for weeks I've asked the question, all right, does Tom Thibodeau want to trade Jimmy Butler? Well, that answer is obviously no.
Right.
But the follow-up question of that is Tom Thibodeau willing to trade Jimmy Butler? And to all the points that you've made about this whole situation, I'm not sure he's willing to do it. Even if it's a terrific return, I'm not sure if he's willing to do it, because if you trade Jimmy Butler, the likelihood of you making the playoffs decreases. You know, I mean, I guess
totally.
it would depend on what you get in return, but
I don't think there's any way. Yeah,
you're not going to get the same caliber player of Jimmy Butler in return. You might get some nice pieces, but at the end of the day, when you consider what the Western Conference is right now, it's going to be really, really tough to make the playoffs after you trade Jimmy Butler. So if you're Tom Thibodeau and you're thinking, if I trade Jimmy Butler, I'm not going to make the playoffs. Well, if I don't make the playoffs after making it last year, I'm probably going to be out of a job.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I kind of understand it from his perspective, but at the same time, it's like my issue with this whole situation has been, you've got a top 15 player in Jimmy Butler. You've got Karl Anthony Towns, who's terrific and an all-star and is, in theory, only going to get better. You got Andrew Wiggins, who's, you know, we can get an Andrew Wiggins at any point.
He's big.
Yeah. But you've got a talented roster, but you've got, there's friction there, and there's players that are not on the same page and not really getting along, and doesn't mean everybody's got to be best friends and hanging out all the time, but you've got to be able to find a way to get along in that locker room and on the basketball court. And to me, like, my opinion is that Tom Thibodeau has not done a very good job of just like finding a way for these guys to
fostering that environment.
Right. Because we've seen situations in past with past teams. I brought up, you know, Shaq and Kobe. Now, is Kat and Jimmy Butler, are they as good a tandem as Shaq and Kobe? No. But
no, I see what you're saying though.
But, you know, those two guys, they had friction. Shaq and Kobe didn't always get along, but Phil Jackson, the coach Phil Jackson, not the executive, found a way to make it work and found a way that, okay, he put in some sort of message to those two guys and the entire team, let's find a way. We got to make this work because we're about winning championships, and this is, we have to find a way to make this work because we're too talented for this not to work. And I just don't know if Tom Thibodeau has done a good enough job of that. Maybe he's tried, and I don't know. I mean, I'm not in that locker room, but
I just don't think that's his skill set.
Right.
I mean, I think that's what it comes down to. And there's coaches. There's no coach out there that's a 10 out of 10 in every category of coaching. And I do think, and I know we kind of talked about Tibbs' antiquated systems and such, but I assume if Tibbs is eventually fired, he's quickly going to be back on somebody else's bench as a lead assistant. I mean, he's not an incompetent basketball mind. I mean, I know you see people saying that on Twitter, but the people who are in front offices that I've talked to, and I mean, and you hear it on TV, on the guy, the players and coaches that are on there, like Tom Thibodeau has clout in the basketball community.
He's not, very liked and very respected around the league.
And that, you know, that's something. And so I think I don't know if he's a 10 out of 10 in that category, but he is something. But he has missed the mark on the personalities angle of this, obviously, like the proof's in the pudding. Like this is where we're at. And I guess what I can just say from my perspective, in the brief time I get to watch in the end of practices and such when I'm there, is it's just kind of like this old school mentality of like the older guys are in with the coach, and the younger guys are like, they're the younger guys, they're you know, they're not as high on the ladder and importance to Thibodeau. Like I remember I was in Houston last year for the playoff game, and they had a practice at I think it was Rice University. We were there, and it was after game one. I remember Towns just like struggled mightily against like Clint Capela, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like Tibbs comes over, he does like his press time with us, and Kat does his, and it's all like, it's awkward, and they're kind of like conflicting sort of view. I don't know. It was just like, it was a weird time. All Timberwolves fans kind of get that. And then I just see like Tibbs walk away, and he walks over towards like Taj and like daps up Taj and like sits by Taj for, 10 minutes, and they're chopping it up. And I'm like, that would be just, it would be cool to see, Tibbs do that with
the younger players,
and I've seen him do that a bunch of times with Derek since he's been here and Jimmy. And I know I'm sure other meetings happen. I'm sure there's been times where he's talking to Wiggs and he's talking to Kat, but it also fits the narrative of like, those are like kind of his guys, and he's just trying to,
his guys from Chicago.
Yeah. And he's just kind of trying to like tell the younger guys, like, you got to build up, to kind of get to this level. And I don't know if that is the strategy. I'm not sure that's the right strategy in 2018. Like, I mean, your highest paid players on the team, that's one measuring stick.
Well,
Wiggins and Towns. So.
Well, and I've brought this up a few times, like on the air and even on this podcast, and just in the last few months, is you can see it in like post game pressers where people are asking, people ask them, okay, Tibbs,
it's such a weird tactic. I know exactly what you're about to say.
But it's like, it's Cat had 22 points and 13 rebounds and a couple blocks. And, can you talk about his performance?
Yeah,
Cat did a nice job. He played really well, and he contributed to winning. And it was
But Taj.
And then you'll say, like, and then it'll be like, Jimmy hit that big shot down the stretch. And, and it could have been a sort of a pedestrian game for Jimmy where he had 13 points and he just made a big play at the end. And they ask him about it, and he's just, Jimmy, he's got this smile, this sort of this half smile on his face. Like, you just talk about his guy. Like, it's just.
No, that's Tibbs' MO, man. That's like.
Yeah.
So I think, and people who stick around for those post-Tibbs press conferences, whether, you're there or you're watching on TV, you might remember it was the same thing with Ricky Rubio in Tibbs' first year. It's like Ricky would have a good game, and someone would, throw him a softball to talk about Ricky's game, and he would always be like, every single time you go, well, I thought we got a lot of Chris Dunn. Chris played really well too. He's been this and this on defense. And like, I've always thought about why is Thibodeau doing that? And I think it's he's trying to like shape the narrative around the players that he more, you know, attaches himself to. It's the same thing with Tyus last year when he was playing, you know, kind of great for that 11 game stretch when Teague was out. And
yeah.
And then, but the same thing, you ask him about Tyus, and he would loop back in with, and but Jeff is one of the best point guards in the league, and you know, when he's back, he brings a lot to us, and he would always say Jeff is one of the best point guards in the league. And it's, I don't know, he at some point, if and when this is all over, it's going to be a fascinating like revisionist history on not only Thibodeau's time here, but the way in which he interacted with the media and his kind of media strategies, because it's, I for lack of a better comparison, I mean, it's like Belichick-esque.
Yeah.
And then with like some,
I know
odd
he's a fan
twist
of Bill Belichick.
Oh, they're friends. Like,
yeah, they're buddies. So.
They're actually friends. And again, like obviously Bill Belichick, like that's worked for him and is working for him. So it's, you know, it's hard to say it's not a good idea. And I mean, Tibbs also kind of in his NBA comparison with the way he deals, you know, with the media is Greg Popovich. That's also worked really well. But I think the difference is those guys have built up resumes that let you kind of shrug off some
championship pedigree.
Right. And it's but and I think that's the difference. Like in Tibbs's eyes, like he feels that he does have that. And we were talking about that earlier. Like he kind of does have some clout in the community, but I just believe that would have served him well. I do kind of think the ship has sailed to have been a little bit more transparent and to just kind of tell us what is thinking it what he's thinking. It seems so much that every answer has some sort of subtext that is the true motivation, and that's just confusing. You know, it's just like it's the antithesis of Flip Saunders, and it's very different than other successful teams in the league right now. I mean, Steve Kerr and the Warriors are like infamously the most open and honest team when it comes to, you know, media relations and exposure to the fans. Like they ran a practice with like Steve Kerr mic'd up. And like I work in the media and I haven't even like,
and this is
experienced
the best,
that here, you know?
And like, this is basically the best team in basketball for the last 5 years.
Totally, right?
You know, like, and they're just like opening their doors and they've you know, they're just welcoming everybody in. And yeah, I just, and the connection with the fans I think is a big thing, because I mean, look, this is, let's be real here, like this is a franchise in its 30th season, and there's been a lot more bad than good in terms of just on the court success. And I just don't know if this is like a great fit in terms of just trying to get the fans engaged and excited and optimistic. And I mean,
might not be a good like personality match.
Right. Correct. And you know, you just watch like take last year, for example, dang, they made the playoffs for the first time in 14 years. Like they won 47 games, their first winning season in 13 years, their first playoff season in 14 years.
And you got all your friends texting you like, man, I can't watch this team.
Yeah,
so
and everybody's
great.
Like, this is miserable. Like, it just, it shouldn't be that way. And it will be interesting to see, like, where this goes, because this just seems like a really awkward situation for everybody involved. Like, just the players, the coach, the owner, the fans, like, everybody involved. This is just... What are we doing here? Yeah, exactly.
I want to expand real quick on the personalities thing, because I think it's interesting. And so all my family is from Chicago, and so obviously, you know, Tibbs was there before, and then being my family, I have a good understanding of like their personalities and some of, you know, like the culture there and the way that people are, and they had a very strong connection to Tom Thibodeau. And obviously like winning helped a lot of that. But I also wonder, you know, different states, different cities carry different personas. And
yeah.
And I just wonder if this Thibodeau like grit is just not compatible with Minnesota Nice. And I know that those are kind of like pretty broad parameters, but and how could have you really known that in advance? But I do think, again, in that revisionist history, we'll look back and be like, yeah, I just don't, even if they would have had more success, I don't know how compatible Tibbs' style was with the Minnesota fan base completely, or I mean, especially considering the way that, like, Flip being the guy before him, essentially. Those polarizing personas were just, like, were just so different. I mean, can you imagine, like, Tibbs going on, like, the Friday Funkadelic with Dan? Like, like, that's just, you know, like, no.
Right.
You can't. And it's, you saw, you had complete transparency from Flip on a weekly basis. And for me, and somebody who's there in those media scrums, I'm not saying that you never get it from Tibbs, but it's like they're much fewer and further between.
You have to kind of scratch and claw for it.
Yeah.
It's really hard to get it out of him, whereas Flip would just give it to you because
right.
that was just who he was. Yeah, it's amazing. Well, and you could kind of see it in terms of the personalities with the players. Like, you know, Ricky Rubio was mm-hmm. the guy who played with energy and he played hard. And that's why I thought when Tibbs first got hired, I thought he and Ricky were going to be like the perfect match because Ricky's a good defender and we know Tibbs values defense and, you know, Ricky values ball movement and just he plays hard and all this.
Not his style, though.
Yeah, but it just was not.
Jeff Teague is his style.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what, you know, we've learned. We've learned over the time of Thibodeau's here. He wants there to be four guys on the floor at least at a time who, when it's low on the shot clock, they can go up and create their own shot. And that's why you go and you sign Jeff Teague for more money than what you already had Ricky Rubio signed on. I mean, and I have this conversation often about, like, what should the Timberwolves do, you know, with people. And it's like, oh, you should have kept Ricky Rubio. Like, they should have made this roster move to get here to have another shooter and to do this and that. And I'm like, yeah, like, I don't disagree with you, but at the same time, we need to have conversations that, like, the should do's need to fall within the Thibodeau system, because the Thibodeau system is what it is, you know.
Yep.
Like, he has his
way
affinities.
Of doing things.
Like Ricky Rubio would be worse at doing what Jeff Teague is doing. I'm not
right.
saying Rubio's a worse player than Jeff, but
he's different.
He's totally different, and this is why Jeff Teague is a one of the best point guards in the NBA to Tom Thibodeau. I think he's actually being honest when he says that, and I think it's the reason why it's really hard for Tibbs to make a trade for Jimmy, because that's the exact type of player he wants to be.
That attachment.
Yeah, it's so there's these Tibbs affinities and what he wants, because he knows what, like, he knows how to put the square peg into the circular hole, and then the fan base is just you know kind of disagrees, and they want to see this more modern or more, you know, something else. More efficiency, and neither of those things are like necessarily wrong. They're just inherently like opposite sides of the Venn diagram, and now because of that it's just so confused, and it's lasted for so long that everyone's just kind of done with it.
Yeah, it's amazing. All right,
I know, I feel defeated now.
well, that's, I mean, it is amazing.
We can talk about exciting things. There's been a couple of, like, interesting, like, actual basketball things that have happened this year.
Well, let me ask you about this, and then we'll get going, because we have so much. I mean, we're just getting started here, so we've got so much stuff. We're only seven games into the season, so we got so many things to get to. But I do want to ask you about your early impressions of Josh Okogie, because obviously with Wiggins having the injury, Josh has gotten a chance to see the floor a lot more, and I like the kid a lot. I like his defense. I mean, he's a rookie, and he's going to make rookie mistakes, but I like, for the most part, I like what I'm seeing so far. What do you say?
I think that, obviously, that energy that we're all seeing is, you know, it's hard to not be like invigorated by that as a fan watching. But the thing I would say and hasn't got enough run yet is he's an awesome kid, like off the floor. And I was out in Las Vegas for summer league, so I got to kind of spend a lot of time with him there. It was just kind of him and Kata were really the only, you know, future roster guys there. And he's just this, like, was first of all, he's so young. You know, he was 19 when he was there, and you just kind of forget some of that sometimes. But he's just this really, like, genuine kid who just, like, all he wants to do is work his butt off and like, play basketball. And we're seeing that now on the NBA level. But I, like, you know, watch him in a couple summer league games and, like, see him afterwards, and he's just, like, gassed, but, like, loving feeling gassed. And I was like, you know, I entered and still do have some concerns about what type of offensive player he can be.
Right.
But, like, having this much of a positive impact when he clearly is so rough around the edges, you have to have an optimistic, like, view of this going forward, because in one way or the other, those rough edges are going to be polished out to some degree, meaning it's only going to get better. And he's already a player who I think is driving winning, particularly for a team who needs that on the defensive end of the floor. So I'm excited with the player, but he's also a player and a personality that I want to see stay around this team once the inevitable culture change happens. Like, yeah, he's not Zach LaVine, but he is another young guy to put into that, like, all right, like, the Jimmy and Taj and Jeff era ended. We're back to Towns and Wiggins. But if we can extend Towns and Wiggins out to Tyus and Josh too, and maybe Kata, like, now we're talking about another window that is coming. So he's probably been the brightest spot of the season, though I'm not sure you're gonna see him play on Wednesday if Wiggins is back.
That's the thing, is, you know, once Wiggs gets back, I mean, you're probably gonna go back to
asked Tibbs last night, and he kind of brushed it off, but he said, I asked him when I was in San Antonio for the season opener, and I was like, do you see him being in your rotation, like, because you kind of knew he was like the 10th guy on the totem pole.
Yeah.
And Tibbs' answer was, well, usually you want your rotations to be 9. So in like classic Tibbs speak, we're like, right, yep, all right, so Josh isn't playing. But I don't know. I mean, I could still see him being obviously in a much smaller role than he has been. But you remember kind of like Marcus Georges Hunt last year?
Mm-hmm.
I kind of like referred to him as like a lefty specialist in baseball, where you bring him in to face the lefty, and then comes back out. Like,
yeah.
I could kind of see Tibbs do some of that with Okogie for some energy and some defense. But Okogie, I always mess that up. But I don't know. I'm excited by the kid. It'll be interesting to see what other pieces do come around, and if he's, you know, if you're trading Butler and you're getting back two or three guys, like, if you get back, like, Goran Dragic and Josh Richardson, like, now you got two more guys in your rotation that.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. But I'm excited. What have you seen in him?
I love his defense, and the wingspan is just crazy bonkers for a guy who's 6'4", 6'5". And I kind of have this.
He's short, man. He's like my height. Like, he's not a big dude, but it's the wingspan.
The wingspan just makes up for that, and he plays like, I mean, he's 6'4"-ish, but he plays like, with that wingspan, he's more like a 6'6", 6'7" guy, mm-hmm, just because of the length that he has.
Which is probably the more important factor than height. Like,
right,
you
exactly.
You don't block shots with your forehead. Like,
right.
You know, yeah,
exactly. But yeah, I love the energy that he plays with, and from, you know, I've never spoken to him, but he seems like a great kid, to your point. And, you know, I've been saying all summer long since the draft that with the cap situation that this team is in right now, right, that these draft picks that you have, even as you become a contending team and you're not in the lottery anymore, you've got to find a way to get something out of these
It's critical.
These later picks that you have, because you're not going to be able, with your cap situation, with Towns and Wiggins making the money that they're making, and, you know, depending on how much longer Jeff Teague is going to be here, mm-hmm. and I mean, Jimmy's probably going to be moving on, but you're still going to be up against the cap, so you can't, you know, with Gorgie's contract, you're not going to be able to just go out in free agency and just sign anybody, so...
No, that's what people need to get. And I know it seems like, all right, so Jimmy Butler, like, falls off your, like... That's what people say. It's like, all right, why don't you just play out the year with Jimmy Butler, and then you got that, then you can just go sign somebody else with his salary that it falls out the books.
It's like, no, you can't do that.
Literally doesn't work.
That money goes away.
Yeah, it's because you're capped out. Like you mentioned Gorgie, and you got Towns's extension kicking in. Wiggins is already in year one. Like, there isn't money. Those deals hitting on every rookie is critical for this team. And I was actually thinking about, that's what I wrote about after the game last night, was that's why the Lakers are in an awesome spot right now, is because you got LeBron, you got a handful of these vets who are like, all right, whatever, but it doesn't really matter because they're about to fall off the books in a year, and then all you have next year on their books is LeBron and guys on rookie deals. And the Wolves, like, aren't going to be that, but that's when you're a team that's not all the way up there, like in contention, like that's what you want. You want to keep the powder as dry as possible so that you can eventually make that next move to bring in another guy or to have the flexibility to do something that gets you to that next level. But if you live capped out and you keep missing on your rookies, then you're just going to be in cap hell. Like that's just where you're at. So yeah, to your point with Okogie, like, that's huge. It's a tiny deal. Ikeda's even smaller as a second round pick. If you can have those guys be in your rotation, I mean, you need it. It has to happen. Like, I don't know how else.
You can't have any more Lazar Haywards. All due respect to Lazar, like,
or Justin Patton, man, Justin Patton.
Well, like, yeah, and that's the other. That was another guy that I said, like, we got to find a way to get something out of him, like, because he was...
You know, he has his rookie option needs to be made tomorrow on Halloween for $3.1 million tomorrow.
Man.
Like, the team, they got to consider turning that down.
Yeah, well, because...
Dude hasn't played.
He hasn't played, and the injury has, you know, he's got another broken foot, and it's just...
He's walking now. I saw him walking yesterday.
Well, that's good.
That's like with his foot in a boot thing, but he was rolling around on a wheelie thing for the first month.
You know, and that's a kid too that I was really like intrigued to like really see like what he could do with just the size and, you know, if he's got some versatility. But now it's just like we never know. And we know like 7-footers with broken feet and foot problems, I mean, it's not a good thing. It's always a dicey thing, man. So I wish the best for him, but I hope that somehow.
It's funny how it goes back to Butler, too. Like, because that was the other part of the Butler trade.
Yeah.
You gave up LaVine, Dunn, and Markkanen for Butler, but you also got the 16th overall pick.
I was thrilled. I was like, wow, they got Jimmy Butler and a top.
As you should have been.
20 pick. Like, that's
I mean, because normally that's a valuable asset. That's the exact type of asset that we're, you know, talking about needing for this group, given the money. I mean, you look at some of the guys that were the next picks in that draft. You got Harry Giles, Terrence Ferguson, Jarrett Allen, OG Anunoby, Kyle Kuzma at 27, 10 picks later. I mean, even Josh Hart was the last pick of the first round there. It's like, oh,
and that's why the Lakers, to your point, that's why the Lakers are where they are, because they got later picks, but they hit on them. Kuzma and Hart are good young players and valuable pieces that, you know, have been good for them. So
I think one of probably the strongest condemnations of Thibodeau is not instilling a culture for youth, though.
Yeah,
and that is what the Lakers did, you know, in the 2 years prior. Like, honestly, they weren't on that different of an arc than the Wolves were. Like, they kind of like cleared house, like the Wolves did with Love and stuff, and it was this like really young group, and they rolled out the young guys for like 2 years. They let Brandon Ingram kind of be a mess, just like the Wolves did with like Wiggs and Zach LaVine, and then the Wolves got a little, they hit the gas like. kind of early on and
tried to cut some corners.
And you got some older dudes, and it cost some of your younger guys like opportunity. Obviously, Tyus is one to point to. Like, it's probably going to be with Josh Okogie this year. Like, there's going to be some missed opportunity. But part of the reason that the Kyle Kuzma had success last year, that Josh Hart has had success, that Brandon Ingram has had success, that Lonzo Ball has been successful, and they look like players that are going to be something going forward, is because they had an opportunity to develop the full slate of, like, go do it. Like, yep. we're gonna work through this. And
go jump in the deep end of the pool and swim. And we're going to be here to help you. But right. this is your thing. You play and learn on the fly and just go.
I mean, it's not unilaterally. That's not always the right move. I think you can say that.
Because it depends on the player, right?
Sure, sure. And, like, I don't know. I think with, like, Wiggins, like, maybe some of that supreme freedom he was given as a rookie, like, has some now negative externalities when we look at some of his shot selection. And even Zach LaVine in Chicago, like, you're kind of made in those first couple of years in a way, or it kind of classically conditioned into being something. So it's important that you're getting the opportunity, but doing it, you know, in the right way. And I guess just in Minnesota, it seems like there isn't even really the opportunity. Like, bring him back to Patton, it's like, where was Patton going to play?
Yeah.
You know, I went to Iowa last year for an Iowa Wolves game once Patton was back, and kind of came back afterwards and asked Tibbs, was like, so, I mean, Patton's healthy right now. When he's back, like, is he someone you can play alongside Towns? And he said, no, he's a five. And so it's like, all right, so you used a first-round pick on a guy who you see as a center. And
you already have, and you have one of the best young centers in the NBA.
Who's playing 36 minutes a game? So, like, there's 12 minutes left. Like, I don't know. It just doesn't seem like youth is any sort of priority. Like, in this Thibodeau culture. I mean, it's not too late. It's probably going to change. I don't think he'll be the coach forever, but that might be some of the reason why the Lakers have ascended in a year or two down the road from now, and while the Wolves are maybe kind of still on some sort of treadmill of mediocrity.
Awesome stuff. I'm so glad you're on board. This is great. This has been fun. And Dane is going to be contributing to this podcast for many more to come. And welcome aboard. Glad to have you a part of it. And we'll talk again next week. And good to meet you in person. We've
just been Twitter friends.
Yeah, we've been Twitter buddies for a while now. But it's good to meet you in person and do this with you. And many more to come. So
we'll be back next week. Maybe Jimmy Butler won't be on the team.
Yeah, who knows? We'll see what happens the next couple of weeks. We got more to come with this podcast in the future. We got another face that's going to be added to it as well here, and
it's gonna be a good year.
Yeah, it's gonna be a really good year. Derek James is still gonna be a part of this as well. If you're wondering where Derek is, he's still gonna be a part of this, so he's not going anywhere.
Right.
So lots more to come. Stay tuned. Follow Dane on Twitter at DaneMoreNBA. Follow me, of course, at MannyHill84. And you can find the Raised by Wolves podcast on iTunes, Podcast One, 1500ESPN.com. As well. For Dane, I'm Manny. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time.